So we've last number of weeks we've been thinking about these awkward conversations and how in this instance the awkward conversation is that the people actually want Jesus to go away. Get out of town. There's no place for you here. And recently on the BBC News website, I saw the report of the dispute that's currently going on in Ballymena at the showgrounds between the football club and the stock car race. And I don't know if you follow this. I'm sure Johnny Doak has an interest in this situation. The council have recently spent £250,000 resurfacing Ballymena showgrounds for the football team. So it's a protected space, but round the pitch there is a stock car racing track, and at the first stock car racing meeting of the season, a car ended up on the pitch, and there was carnage, tracks spread across the pitch, right? You can just imagine the signs, and all, please keep off the grass, and people walking around the edge, but now there's a stock car in the middle of it. And there was absolute war between the football club and the stock car racing club because the ground is owned by the council but leased to both these parties. And there was obviously inadequate kind of provision or protection around the pitch, a few tires to try and stop the cars from going on. Questions have been asked if the two sports can coexist in the same venue and the same location. And they seem to, the football team and the car racing club seem to have equal right to the ground, but everyone in the football camp is saying it's time for the cars to go. No place for cars on the ground. The comments online in this debate were fascinating, and they were just like, the stock car racing is damaging, is destructive, is having a negative impact on the football club, and the inhabitants of the region of Ballymena and around are unhappy and want it to go. And in Mark chapter 5, the inhabitants of the region want Jesus out. They think that he is having a negative impact on the region. The people began to plead with Jesus, leave, get out of town. There's no place for you here. We want you out. Can you imagine a situation in your life or your vicinity where actually it would be better if Jesus would just go? If he would just clear off, please, because you're having a negative impact, a destructive impact on my life. According to their assessment of things at the time, his activity could not coexist with their activity. Somebody had to go. Something had to give. His ambitions, the ambitions of Jesus, clashed with the ambitions of the people living in the region of the Decapolis or the Ten Towns. They were unhappy with him. He was bad for business. And Mark's account of this story is absolutely fascinating. This place, the Decapolis, was home to the Gentiles, non-Jewish people, and we know that the Jews thought pigs were unclean animals and would have nothing to do with them. But in this story, as Mark tells it, Jesus crosses the lake and deliberately goes to the Gentiles. He seeks them out. He chooses to be in the presence of the Gentiles, whom his own community thought of as unclean. He didn't just cross the lake. He crossed a cultural divide. He crossed a barrier from his own culture, from his own people, and stepped into a region where he would not have been popular, where there would have been lots of talk about him, and he stepped into that region. He deliberately set his face towards people who were opposed to him, who thought differently from him, and he may have ended up getting flack from his own community for being there in the first place. He's crossed a cultural divide, and upon arrival, he's confronted by this demoniac, this man who is identified as Legion. So Legion is like thousands of troops in an army, and he's saying, we are many, because there are many demons inside this man, possibly thousands. Actually, the man was an outcast in his own community. He lived among the tombs. He couldn't be restrained. Every time they chained him or bound him in some way, he was supernaturally powerful, able to break the chains and go free. He couldn't be contained. He was an on the run, right? That's our terminology. Couldn't be contained by his own community. prone to self-harm, loud cries in the day and night, and he lived among the tombs. You can build a picture of this man. This is not the sort of person you would invite round for a dinner party. This is not the sort of person you could choose to hang out with. He was a freak. He was a difficult person, an intimidating, scary guy who everyone avoided, and we're told that no one was powerful enough to bind him. He had an evil spirit, and though many attempts had been made to restrict him, no one was capable of it. N.T. Wright, in his book about this passage, says this: "The man who rushes out to meet Jesus is about as unclean as you could get." I don't know who fits that bill for you, who would come to mind as you think about someone who is unclean, someone who you would be intimidated by, someone you would want to be in the presence of. But the interesting thing in this passage is that it's Jesus that takes the initiative. Jesus goes in that direction. When you and I are most likely to go the opposite direction from people who are difficult, we choose not to have the awkward conversation, Jesus goes towards them. And I think that's insightful for us as a church in thinking about how do we represent Jesus in the world? Who does the world run away from? We should be running towards. Who repulses you? Who would you cross the street to avoid? Well, this is the kind of person that Jesus crosses the street to be in the company of. And I think that's really challenging. I think it's a challenging and encouraging feature of the life of Jesus that he crosses the street or crosses the lake to encounter people that you and I would cross the street to get away from. And Mark tells us that when the man sees Jesus, he runs to Jesus and falls at his feet. He didn't run away from Jesus, he ran to him. And I think that's helpful too, because we typically have in our mind the kind of people who would want to know about Jesus and the kind of people who wouldn't want to know about Jesus. We have likely candidates for conversion. We think, oh, I might invite this person to an Alpha course. They seem to be receptive. They seem to be open or warm. And we make prejudgments about who may or may not come to know Jesus. And when this guy encounters Jesus, he runs and falls at his feet. We would not have assumed that this guy was a likely candidate to come on the Alpha course. He would not have been the name that came to mind when we're thinking about inviting someone to church. Or we're thinking, who is expressing interest in the Christian faith? This guy was miles away. And he runs to Jesus. And he shouts at the top of his voice, "What do you want from me, Jesus, the Son of the Most High?" So he expresses an accurate theological statement. And I think there's something in this passage that tells us, let's not be impressed with people just because they have accurate theological statements. He's a demon-possessed man, and he can make an accurate theological statement. He identifies Jesus as the name Most High, or the God Most High. This means that it's never okay to be impressed with Christian leaders who can spout accurate theological statements, but their behavior is horrendous. It's not an excuse. Just because you know your stuff doesn't mean you can behave in a horrendous way. And so I don't think we should be too impressed with people who can just communicate sound doctrine. Their lives need to be representative of people who trust in that doctrine, who appreciate that doctrine, who surrender to Jesus Christ, not just say the right things. Here's a guy who says the right things, but his life's a mess. And Jesus says, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit," and asks him to identify himself. The demons request to be sent into the pigs, and Jesus gives them permission, and so 2,000 pigs rush down a steep bank and into a river. This is weird. They're into the lake. This is strange. Why on earth would the demons go into the pigs? What do we learn from this story? What we're going to do this morning is just something a little bit different. We're going to think about a couple of things or implications from this passage. I'm not expecting you to remember them all, but we'll just think of a few things that may be insightful or instructive for you and I as we attempt to live for Jesus today. These pigs plunge into a lake, having gone down a steep bank. The pig farmers share the news and report what happened, and the residents of the Decapolis beg Jesus to leave. Get out. Go. And then the man who has been transformed or changed, he wants to go with Jesus. So the residents want Jesus out, and the man wants Jesus to stay. He wants to stay with Jesus. the demon-possessed man, but Jesus says to him, go to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he's had mercy on you. First thing I think that we should see as an implication of this passage is that we should expect those who are far away to be brought near. We should expect that in the church and as individual Christians, that those who are far away from Jesus can be brought near. This man wasn't a few rungs up the spiritual ladder. He hadn't got the attention of Jesus by doing spiritual things or by being kind to his neighbor or expressing Christ-like character. He was a million miles away. And yet the presence of Jesus in his life brought about incredible transformation. I think that should encourage us. That should help us to be hopeful about the people who we know right now today who seem a million miles away. I think that should really help us. He was in a bleak place mentally, cutting himself. He was living among the tombs. We should be hopeful about people who are a million miles away and seeming unlikely to ever come to know Jesus. We should be filled with hope. If you find that this guy is living among the tombs, it's not the sort of place where, it was a Kirsty Allsop and Phil Spencer, location, location, location. No, this is a desirable postcode if you're trying to get into the school, or this is a leafy suburb, or no, he's not living in a nice place. He's living in a place of death. And it's not a desirable place to be, but it's a place that Jesus goes to. So you think of people who are living mentally, maybe, in a poor place, physically in poor condition, or spiritually in the all sorts of stuff. This passage tells us that Jesus has authority over the geography, has authority over the mind, has authority over the spiritual condition of every human being. We should be filled with hope that there are no barriers to God's power, geographically, spiritually, physically. There is nobody too far gone. I love what Paul says to the Ephesians about their own spiritual condition. He says, remember at one time too, you were separate from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel, and foreigners to the covenants of the promise, without hope and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, you who were once far away have been brought near by the blood of Christ. Not only should this give us hope, but it should give us humility. We were this guy. We were not a few rungs up the spiritual ladder before Jesus came to us. If you or I can come to faith, then anyone can come to faith. We didn't deserve it. We weren't entitled to it. We didn't place ourselves in a prime geographical position in order to get the attention of God. We didn't do anything spiritually. We were dead in our transgressions and sins, and Christ made us alive. Out of the pit, he lifted me. That's your story. That's my story. We should expect people who are far away to be brought near. That's the first thing I think we should expect as a result of reading this passage. Second thing that we can expect or should expect is for Jesus to deliver us from evil. The demons drowned at the end of the passage. The demons went into the lake. It was game over. 2,000 pigs into the lake. Game over. Why on earth would that happen? Why on earth would Jesus permit this? It seems bizarre. Why was it necessary? What does it teach us? Well, it encourages our faith, because if he just commanded the demons to come out, then you might be thinking, like, well, where did they go? Where did the demons actually go? But because they went into the pigs, there was evidence that the demons went somewhere, and they went into a lake and drowned, which is a picture that we're given in Revelation 20 of what will one day happen to the devil and all his demons, that they will be drowned in the lake of fire. And so this is evidence and a picture of what will happen ultimately to evil. It will be conquered finally, totally. And so Jesus gives an aid to the people, a visual aid as to what's going to happen to evil one day. The demon-possessed pigs entering the sea is a picture of what will eventually happen at the end of time. And the devil, Revelation says, and the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of burning sulfur where the beast and the false prophet had been thrown. They will be tormented day and night forever and ever. I want you to remember these pigs plunging into the lake as you pray, deliver us from evil. Jesus has the ability to deliver you from evil, from harm, from difficulty. Only he can do it. It's not down to you. It's not on your shoulders to transform your life or to transform the life of other people. I want you to be liberated this morning to know the power of Jesus over evilness is a picture of it. We should expect Jesus to deliver us from evil. Third thing is that we should expect Jesus to know what's best for us. We should expect Jesus to know what's best for us. If you've ever been ill, lost the color in your cheeks, you know, lost your appetite, lost your energy, and people notice it about you, maybe seen you at home in bed or in hospital, and they report to your relatives how you're doing that day. You know, it didn't look great today, and I didn't look great. And mustn't be eating. All I could do, needs to eat, needs a drink, trying to get him to drink. You know, and everyone's wanting what's best for you. But then if whatever is wrong with you starts to leave your body, starts to go, and you start to improve, and the color returns to your cheeks, and you start to eat again, and you think, I think I could have a lunch, and you know, your energy is restored a little bit, and someone comes to visit you and haven't seen you maybe since last week, and they'll say, you're looking a wee bit more like yourself today. We know what that means, that we're becoming more like who somebody has in mind, thinks this is what you should look like. You see, everybody has a picture in their mind of what you and I should look like, and if we don't look that way, they say, I look very tired. I'm like, thanks. If anybody tells you you look tired, there's no appropriate response. You need to make an excuse as to why you look so terrible. But in this passage, this guy in the presence of Jesus becomes more like himself, more like the person God intended him to be when he surrenders to Jesus. When Jesus has control and lordship over his life, he becomes the person that God intended him to be. And that's not just true for this person, it's true for all of us. And yet for me and for you, I'm sure there are times that we want Jesus to leave because we have ambitions, we have plans, we have hopes, and we think, actually, I could just get on with things a lot better if I didn't have to surrender to Jesus' will for my life, if I didn't have to consider what he says, if I could just keep him at arm's length, things would go better for me. I know that temptation. I'm sure you know that temptation too. But I think the implication of this passage is that we should expect that Jesus knows what's best for us. And if we surrender to him, we become the people God intended us to be. You become more like yourself when you surrender to Jesus. I told you before about Chris Froome, who when he was an up-and-coming cyclist was in a very kind of minor cycling team in South Africa, and he got a call from Robbie Hunter, who was the greatest cyclist that Africa had ever known. He left a voicemail on Chris Froome's phone saying, Chris, it's Robbie Hunter here. I want to talk to you about your plans for next year. And Chris Froome got the voicemail and said, Robbie Hunter wants to talk to me about my plans? He said, in that moment, I took the hard negotiating position that whatever his plans were for me, they were my plans too. Do you know what that is? That is all of my ambitions, hopes, and plans. I surrender these into your hands. All the Robbie Hunter I surrender, all to him I freely give. You see, we all want someone to lead us. Discipleship is happening everywhere. And we, as the people of God, need to look to Jesus and expect that he knows what's best for us. Jesus can deliver you from evil. Jesus knows what's best for you if you trust him. We should expect Jesus to know what's best for us. This guy who was once living in isolation now is in community. He's telling the people all around him what Jesus has done for him. He's in community, not isolated. He was once destroying his own body, but now he's not doing that. He was once out of his mind, and now he's in his right mind. He becomes more fully the person God intended him to be as a result of the lordship of Jesus Christ in his life. Finally, we should expect following Jesus to be costly. This is why they want Jesus out, because they've just lost 2,000 pigs, and it was their livelihood, and they placed their hope in it. You see, I know lots of people who are skeptical about faith, skeptical about Jesus. They have doubts. But to doubt Jesus doesn't mean that you don't have faith. If you doubt Jesus, you place your faith somewhere else. Everybody who doubts places their faith somewhere else. And this community doubted Jesus, but they placed their faith in the pigs or in their livelihood. It's not that they had no faith. It's just they didn't place it in Jesus. They placed it in something. There is nobody who exists who has no faith. We're all trusting in someone or something. And following Jesus was costly for these people. Some of the residents of the Decapolis wanted Jesus to leave. Others were amazed at the testimony of the man who had experienced mercy. They couldn't believe the transformation in him. And this is ministry. This is ministry. If you lead or serve in the life of the church, some people are amazed. Some people want Jesus out of there. And it can be hard to watch people keep Jesus at arm's length or push him out, because you know that it would be best for people to surrender to the Lordship of Jesus Christ. You know that they would become more fully themselves if they would only surrender. And ministry's hard because you watch people keep him at arm's length or walk the opposite way. And that is difficult and challenging. The people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. Do you know what this means? This means they would rather have had the pigs on the field than the man in his right mind. They prioritized these pigs rather than a human being. That's how you know you've got your priorities wrong. They're like, I'd rather have my pigs in the business than a fellow human being clothed and in his right mind. They prioritized the wrong stuff, swine over souls. That's a problem. And it happens in our society all the time. When business becomes a priority, when making money becomes a priority, and people become devalued so that we can have our way. I was never a big fan of the Antiques Roadshow. It used to be on Sunday afternoon, and it wasn't ever very exciting. I didn't ever find it. But when it happened to be on in our house, I remember sometimes, you know, the person who was doing the valuing, just like turning over a cup and their eyes would open really wide and a broad smile would come across their face because they've discovered something really precious and they're about to communicate to the person who owned it that this is really, really valuable. And you maybe had no idea. This was supremely valuable. They were holding out something of great value to the person who owned it. And sometimes I look at stuff and say, I'm sorry, you just need to take that to the skip. You know, that's of no value. That's of no value at all. We're fools if we attach ourselves to things that have no value when the person who is of supreme value wants a relationship with us. We are fools. If we attach ourselves to anything so much that it means that Jesus has to leave, we've got our priorities wrong. We're full of unhealthy allegiances. I am and you are. There are things that we think, oh, Jesus, please just let me keep this. Please don't mess with this. We hang a do not disturb sign over some aspect of our lives and we think this is really ultimately of value. It's not. Relationship with Jesus is of ultimate value. Jesus stepped across from one context to another in order to demonstrate the love of God. There is no barrier or boundary to where he can reach you. And so the interesting thing in this passage is that following the interaction with Jesus, it's the guy who was demon-possessed who is begging to go with Jesus. And if the pig farmers are saying, get him out of here. I love how Paul reveals to the Philippians how his values change. You know, Paul was really a religious guy, grew up knowing religious stuff. He was from a religious family. He had like heritage. He used Bible inside out and back to front. He was from the right tribe. He was zealous for persecuting Christians. And he says in his letter to the Philippians, I consider everything loss in comparison to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus as my Lord. There's a surpassing greatness to knowing Jesus. Everything minus Jesus. You can have everything, but if you don't have Jesus, you have nothing. Everything minus Jesus equals nothing. Jesus plus nothing equals everything. If you have Jesus, you have all you need. The Lord's my shepherd, I'll not want. I'm not sure how this issue in the Ballymena Showgrounds is going to be resolved. Somebody's going to have to go or not. I'm not sure how the issues in your life are going to be resolved. But the one thing you need to make sure is that Jesus is present in your life no matter what has to go. No matter what has to go, my prayer, my ambition is that he would be with you. you know, we need to trust him in these days, to have faith in him, to believe that he is supremely valuable, to believe that he loves us in our present condition, that he'd go out of his way to be with us. Those who are far away will be brought near by the blood of Christ. He can deliver us from evil. He knows what's best for us. Following him is costly. May you know the presence of Jesus in your life today. And in a moment, we're going to lift the offering. And just while we lift the offering, we're going to listen to the song that Jamie sings and consider today, maybe just one of those things is something that you need to know in your mind right now. I'm not expecting you to remember all four, but maybe there's one of those things you just want to hold on to and take from this place and chew on over the week ahead as we make our morning offering to God.